When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. Welcome to Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, and I'm also the director of New York City's Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History. My co-host today, comedic co-host Maeve Higgins. Maeve!
Hi, good
it's
to see
so
you.
It's been so long, it's been too long.
Yeah, I know. I was in Ireland, I had my sister's wedding. You don't need to hear all
okay,
this.
Okay, okay. And you're a longtime veteran of Star Talk, mm-hmm. and you're host of the podcast, Maeve in America.
Yes, that's
cute,
right.
Cute title. I did your podcast.
You did, yeah.
Okay, I hope I did okay.
You did great. I mean, my podcast is about immigration, and your point was, we're all from Africa.
Yes.
So that was really blew my podcast out of the water.
Everybody is an immigrant to where they are.
Yeah,
it's just
a
matter of how far back you look.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, don't come to me telling me, you're an immigrant and you're not. You're native. No, nobody's native.
Right.
Not even the people who call themselves native are native. It's true.
Right. But, you know, it's hot. It's a hot topic.
We're all natives of Africa.
Right.
If you want to go all the way back.
That's right, right. Which is why it was cool when the English went and claimed Africa. No, I'm just kidding.
So today, we're not talking about immigration. We're talking about the future of meat. Meat. And meat as it might appear to have a future in the laboratory. That's according to Paul Shapiro, author of the recent book, Clean Meat, How Growing Meat Without Animals Will Revolutionize Dinner and the World. And we've got him in studio to give us all the details on the future of this sustainable, humane, and
tasty.
We hope.
Indeed it is, mate.
So, Paul, welcome to Star Talk. Not your first rodeo with us.
No, I'm very honored to be back.
Thank you. Excellent. You carry a title, Vice President of Policy at the Humane Society of the United States. That's a thing.
That is a thing. Yeah, amazing. I know. But it's great to be here. And I'll tell you that if you go back to the time when we were walking around the plains of Africa, the cradle of humanity, never since that time have we had the ability to divorce meat production from live animal raising or killing. And now, scientific advances are allowing us to do just that. And there's a lot of reasons that we want to do that. So, for example, Neil, your brother from another mother, Bill Nye, often points out that raising animals for food is one of the leading contributors to climate change and a lot of other pressing environmental problems.
Well, agriculture in general. Yeah.
Agriculture, but especially animal.
Especially animal raising.
Right. And so one of the solutions could be just eat less meat and enjoy more plant-based foods. That's a great solution. We ought to do it.
I feel like that's something we all know. And like not many of us do.
Maybe
like
we're like, on the head.
I've
You're trying to change
that.
People's behavior.
Right.
And
it's
that's
like
hard.
Exercise. And we're like, I absolutely mean to. And I will
do I had intended to this morning.
That's right. All the more reason why we want to divorce meat production from livestock raising. And so now, if the problem is that we're raising too many animals for food, one of the solutions may lie within those animals themselves, that is, within their very cells.
Like if they could learn to speak, they'd be like, stop it.
That is one of the things we need to pioneer to enable them to have a voice.
Yeah, but please, until, no. Then, yeah.
Until then, though, there's now a group of startups that are creating what's called cellular agriculture, the process of growing real foods like real meat from animal cells as opposed to animal slaughter. And what these companies are doing is producing real animal products. We're not talking about alternatives to meat here. We're talking about real meat simply grown with vastly fewer resources than are needed to produce whole animals only to slaughter them. I know it sounds like science fiction, and indeed in many sci-fi plots.
But they're not animals, so they're not animal products.
Well, they are come from animal cells a lot of the time. So you're growing meat from animal cells.
Okay. But
so
they don't have
you're culturing the cells.
That's exactly right. That's, yeah, uh-huh. So basically you're producing this through cell culture. And so it's been the domain of sci-fi for a long time. Everything from Star Trek on the USS Enterprise, that's how they ate meat, was eating clean meat. But now it's not sci-fi. In fact, it's science fact.
And that's what you cover in your book.
That's right.
So how real is it? Is there a restaurant that's going to get a T-bone steak that you grew in your lab?
Perhaps one day. But for right now, these companies are making ground meat products. Think more like hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken nuggets, sausages.
Stuff where the texture of the meat is lost from its original fibers anyway. And there's so many meat products that are on the docket.
Yes.
For that, like as you said, just ground beef anyway.
Right.
Hot dogs, sausage, that sort of thing.
Because you're not growing creatures, right? Like they don't have like bones or brains or
that's right.
organs. It's just like the stuff we use.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we just need the meat. So
you know, there was one of the Gary Larson comics, and it said. Boneless chicken ranch, and the chickens have no bones. They're just on the ground.
It's just like a rubber chicken farm.
Yeah. So well, maybe this will be like the brainless chicken ranch, where it's just a bunch of cells of
right.
chicken.
Cells. None of them are reading. Yeah, or, right. yeah.
So how soon is this going to happen?
Well, these companies are not yet commercialized with the exception of one, a company called Geltor, which is producing gelatin from basically through cell culture. But
gelatin has always been... like animal hoofs or something.
Yeah,
right?
Protein hooves or from skin or skeleton. Mm-hmm. Gelatin is basically just like...
The day I learned that, I said, no, I don't need Jell-O that badly. I'm sorry. I don't crave Jell-O.
It's
enough.
Funny that they never like branded it differently. They were like, gelatin, Jell-O. Like the link is so there for us all to know about. Right.
Well, with the exception of Geltor, which has commercialized, these companies are looking at introducing products like meat or milk or eggs or even leather. Really,
they
in the next...
They can make eggs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
And so what we're talking about is probably for some of them, like leather and egg whites and milk, probably another year or so. Then with the meats, you're looking probably more like 2021, although one company, Hampton Creek, does pledge that within 2018, they will start selling some product that is a clean meat product.
And they're called Hampton?
Hampton Creek.
And it's like a race, right? Like, so I can imagine... There's all companies. Is it like the space race almost, like where they're all trying to get there first?
Oh, that's got to be hugely lucrative.
Hugely lucrative. These companies are bringing in millions of dollars from venture capital funds in Silicon Valley. And even agriculture giant Cargo is investing in this space because they see clean meat as part of the future of humanity's protein consumption.
Who's going to be the first to adopt clean meat? Would it be vegans?
No, quite the opposite. The reality of the surveys shows that the more meat you eat now, the more likely you are to want to eat clean meat. The less meat you eat now, the less likely you are, because this is meat. It's real animal meat. And so vegans...
Yeah, but you're not enslaving and killing animals to get it.
Yeah.
And that has been one of the many arguments posed against meat eaters.
So that is one of the reasons why some people choose to be vegetarian or vegan. And for those people, that is that problem is addressed through clean meat. People
have other
reasons too. But the fact remains that the more meat you eat, the heaviest meat eaters, so to speak, are the people most interested in eating this.
And why? How do you know they'll be most interested? One is, I want my T-bone out
that's
of the rib of a cow.
Right?
And none of this newfangled Frankenfood.
Yeah.
No scientist is going to put
like a barbecue guy.
Right, barbecue guy.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, interestingly enough, Memphis Meats, which is one of the companies leading this space, is...
See, that's the kind of name. Memphis Meats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like one of the guys who...
For those of you listening on the radio, Neil is wearing a cowboy hat. It just appeared out of nowhere.
It just materialized.
Just materialized.
As soon as the voice started. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, they are one of the top people of the company is a guy whose family owns a chain of barbecue joints in Memphis and the surrounding areas. And they have pledged they want to be serving Queen Meat on their menu as soon as these guys get it ready. And what they're envisioning is something to be pretty cool. So they want to do... like, if you imagine right now a restaurant, you might think in the back they're brewing their own beers. Maybe they got their own type of IPA. Imagine a restaurant.
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn. That's yeah. like every...
Imagine, yeah. instead of brewing their own beer, they're brewing their own meats. And you could even imagine, like, the mascot, like a pig from whom these cells were biopsied in the restaurant.
That would be cool.
Around, and you could
everybody
eat the
meat. Pat the pig on the back and say, thanks, pig.
In fact, the company we were just talking about, Hampton Creek, did exactly that. They took a sesame seed-sized biopsy from a chicken, grew real chicken nuggets from his cells, and ate them while he pecked about at the grass right before their feet.
Wow.
So creepy.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. It's fine. That's sci-fi cool. In the moment. Now, what is this that NASA has to do with this? I know that there's a huge food research group in Houston for this to keep food fresh for the length of space missions.
Yeah.
So I know they think a lot about food texture, food taste. And so what's their role in this? I have that in my notes, and I'm like, where's it coming from?
Oh, they're the progenitor. So NASA was doing research around the turn of the century, funding this research into growing meat, because if humans are going to travel the cosmos, they're not bringing Noah's Ark in tow. If they want meat, they're going to have to grow it. And so NASA funded this
research. It's not a separate spaceship for the cow.
Yeah, right,
for the cows and the chickens.
Yeah. That's exactly right. NASA needs to be ultra efficient with how they're producing food for anybody who wants to go on long distance cosmic tourism. And the way that you do that is you grow it. And so they funded this research to grow real fish meat outside of the fish. And it got a lot of attention when they did it right around the turn of the century. And that spawned this whole industry because people thought to themselves, wait a minute, they wouldn't do that out in space. Why not here on Earth? We have a real problem with animal agriculture. And if we could address some of the key problems of sustainability with animal ag, you could address huge problems from climate change and so many other issues.
Do you know enough about the molecular structure of the different cuts of meat to be able to duplicate that in the lab? So, will I know it's T-bone meat versus a filet mignon?
Yeah.
Right.
So far, they don't have the capacity to make those type
or
of whole cuts
meat.
Of meat. Yeah. Yeah. So right now, what they're doing is, like we said, ground meat. And so, yeah, they can do different cells. I mean, they could even do like a turducken type thing where you take cells from a turkey, cells from a duck, and cells from a chicken and mix them all together. So you could do that. But
that's
it's
a thing
still,
a turducken?
Delicious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you
I
still,
can't say I've ever had that urge. You know, these three birds, I want to put them all together.
Yeah.
But you know, this field of cellular agriculture, it is still a nascent industry. I mean, this is really these companies.
Is it easier to make fish than it is to make, like, steak?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, one company called Finless Foods, I ate their queen fish recently, and it is definitely easier to produce fish. And then the next would be like avian, like poultry meat, and then mammalian meat comes later. But these companies are doing it all. And their goal is to compete with animal products, not in some type of a way where these are a niche product, but rather to compete on cost and on taste with commodity meats.
Is fish easier because almost no matter where you are in the filet, it tastes the same?
Well,
whereas that's not so with the side of a cow?
That may be one reason, but a bigger reason is that fish are in a much colder environment than we're in. And so the cells don't have to be kept at such a high temperature. So you have far fewer energy costs because fish cells can be kept at the temperature in which the fish live.
Oh, that's right. I didn't ask you about the energy and the cost to make it. So first, let me agree with you. If you make hamburgers this way, you can just transform the hamburger market. Everyone's going to agree.
Yeah.
No one is going to deny that.
I agree.
Completely. And that's a huge part of the American diet. Right. Is the hamburger. And I might even eat more hamburgers knowing that this is what it is. So what would per pound, what's your lab meat going to cost? Your Franken meat.
Hardly. The first ever clean burger that was ever produced was in 2013, and Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google, funded it. And it was for a bargain price of $330,000 per burger.
Okay.
But,
now the second burger is the one that costs $5, right?
Yes. And so in the last 4 years, the price has come down more than 80%. and
they took all the diamonds out of the burger. Let's start again.
Now the burger's only $20,000 rather than $300,000.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't use ketchup instead of gold dust. But
right,
yeah.
Right, right.
But no, so now these companies are saying they think by around 2020 or so, they might get it down to like $11 a burger. But there's a long way to go. But, you know, the first iPhone was over $1 billion to produce. And these companies have only been in existence for a couple years. They're already driving the cost way down, and clean meat will become a reality within years, not decades.
So, Paul, recently I posted a tweet that I didn't think would be controversial. I thought people would just be intrigued by it. The tweet was, cows are biological machines invented by humans to turn grass into steak. And I thought the blunt truth of that would just sort of wake people up and say, oh my gosh, is that what this, oh, I didn't know that kind of thing. That I think many people don't know that we invented cows. There's no herds of roaming cows terrorizing the hillsides, right?
Because that's what cows do, terrorize.
That's what they do.
The herbivores are always terrorized.
Oh man, the gang of herbivores.
Yeah.
So it received a very strong negative reaction. I would say 80-20, negative to positive or to neutral. And I didn't see that coming. Did you see that coming? You follow me on Twitter, right? Is that right?
I certainly do follow you on Twitter.
He's the one.
I'm the one.
Oh, you're the one. You started. Mr. Humane Society guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you know, I published a piece in response to this where I was defending part of what you were saying. I mean, I think, look, if you consider that when you domesticate wild animals into domesticated animals, that that's an invention of an animal that didn't exist before, then sure, that is a type of invention. I will say, though, that the wild animals from whom they were domesticated, the auroch, they were turning grass into meat, too, before we ever saw them. That's what ruminants do. That's what giraffes and camels and deer and elk do. They turn grass into meat. So I don't know that we caused them to do that, but to the extent that we did create cows by domesticating the auroch.
Cows do it way more efficiently than the auroch did, I'm sure. Otherwise, we'd still use the aurochs.
We actually exterminated them. They're extinct. The last one died in the 1600s.
That's what I heard. They actually came farther into modern times than just the Ice Age debacle of the mammals.
But don't you think that it's because like people were just feel so bad and weird about that stuff, and that's why when you just said the blunt truth, they were like, no, that's not it.
It was like cows are feeling creatures. And I said, my tweet has nothing to do with that.
Right.
I think it's hard to separate it.
Yeah. You're right, Maeve. I think the idea of an animal being a machine is what some people found offensive, because a machine implies that they're not sentient, that they don't have thoughts.
I said biological machine.
Yeah. Oh, I think for anybody who follows
that's a very scientist-like kind of thing.
No, it could be a mechanical machine. Right. There's a biological machine.
Because right, in a way, we are biological machines, too.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Of course. But that one has a very tuned purpose. That's all. Mm-hmm. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, more on the future of clean meat when Star Talk returns.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back to Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I got my co-host, comedic Maeve Higgins.
Yep, here I am.
Maeve, and host of the podcast, Maeve in America.
Maintaining an Irish accent since 1981.
Is that on purpose? Right. You actually have a Brooklyn accent now. You're hiding it.
Hey, thank you.
Sorry. So a special in-studio guest is Paul Shapiro, author of the recent book, Clean Meat. How growing meat without animals will revolutionize dinner and the world. Cool subtitle there. And we've been exploring just the cutting edge technology that Paul says is going to revolutionize everything about how about our relationship to animals that are farmed for their products. It wouldn't only be food, but leather, presumably, or other yes. and other products. We're going to bring in some more expertise here. Joining us on video call to help us just break down the science inside the laboratory is biologist Liz Specht. Liz, welcome to Star Talk.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Excellent. So you're a senior scientist at the Good Food Institute.
Correct.
Okay, who's the senior scientist at the Bad Food Institute? That's what I want to know.
Her arch enemy.
Her arch enemy in the parallel universe. I want the scientist in the Badass Food Institute. How about that?
That I'll own.
So you use biotech to in the field of synthetic biology. To make clean meat. And I don't know that that's a common term yet today, synthetic biology. It sounds almost oxymoronic. Could you define that for us all?
Absolutely, yeah. So my academic background is in the field of synthetic biology. And the way I like to explain it is to think of biology like a Lego set. So in all of the millions of years that biology's been doing its thing through evolution, we've developed this really cool toolkit of all of these various enzymes, metabolic pathways to make cool molecules, structures that have different functions and properties. So synthetic biology is simply looking at all the Lego pieces across a lot of different Lego sets and building new things that never existed before, rather than just building the object on the front of the Lego box. What's cool, though, is that you actually don't need something like synthetic biology to make clean meat. So that's, you know, certainly there's room for synthetic biology to do more sophisticated tricks down the line. But clean meat is just farming animal cells, muscle cells and fat cells and so forth, rather than farming the whole animal. So when we grow and multiply these cells in culture, it's kind of the most natural thing for cells to do. There's nothing really synthetic about going from one cell to two, two to four, four to eight. That's what they do best.
Okay, just diss Paul and his book? It feels like you just dissed his entire work here.
I think there's definitely room for synthetic biology. I think, you know, folks who kind of assume that there's something engineered or synthetic about clean meat might be wary of it as a technology going into their food. Obviously, you know, we find our food very personal. So certainly there's room to leverage synthetic biology. And obviously, I'm incredibly excited about the potential of that. But we can grow these cells in a very straightforward way in culture.
So if I understand you correctly, you're interested in creating transgenic life, life that nature itself hadn't produced or doesn't know to produce. And you had some clever need for one kind of animal or bacterium or virus versus another, and you just go at it. Is that a fair characterization?
So that's been part of my research background, yeah. And again, I think there's a role for that in clean meat, but it's not necessary. So clean meat is separate from whether these will be genetically engineered cell lines. One thing that I find really cool about clean meat is that, you know, whether you engineer the cell lines or not, you completely decoupled the manner of production from the animal itself. Mm-hmm. So now we're open to all of the species we could possibly want to farm for their meat. It's just as easy for us to make an antelope steak as it is a cow steak.
So, Paul, if you're just duplicating cells that or culturing cells, whatever the proper bio word is, does that mean you could also manufacture organs for transplant?
Yeah, interestingly enough, the lead company in the cellular agriculture space, a company called Modern Meadow, they're making queen leather. It was founded by a father and son team that before that had founded a company called Organova, where they were making human organ tissues for experimentation purposes and one day for transplantation purposes, too. One key distinction. So you can use synthetic biology, for example, to make some of these products like milk and egg whites and so on. The clean meat companies, though, not the liquid products, but the solid products, really are just using tissue engineering, not so much the type of synbio, so to speak, as the others are using.
Okay. So I'm just curious if there might be part of the world who's afraid to eat food that a scientist made in the laboratory.
I heard that there was a restaurant.
For no reason, of course, because yes. If it's the same cells.
Right, it's yeah, the same. Right?
It would be out of the absence of awareness and knowledge of what you're actually doing and the fear factor that comes with every new wave of scientific discovery.
Yeah, I heard there was a restaurant around the corner here that got busted. They were trying to make their food more palatable, and so they were throwing sodium chloride on it.
Oh, you can't do that. Oh, my gosh.
I know. So, of course, as educated listeners of this show know, it's just table salt. But for most people, they hear sodium chloride or dihydrogen monoxide, and they think, like, you know, these are real problems. And of course, it's just table salt and water. And so I think that there are some people who have a concern about technology as it's applied to food. But keep in mind, virtually everything we eat has had some type of food technology applied to it. I mean, most people aren't concerned about eating a seedless watermelon, despite the fact that it's hardly natural.
A seedless anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right.
So Liz, are you the weird one at the Thanksgiving table?
Well, I think the weird one might be that father and son team who were like, well, we used to make human organs, but now we make bacon. Just like, okay.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, how are you received by would-be friends or family?
I think I am lucky in that I reside in pretty nerdy circles. So I think most people that I interact with day to day really, really get the value of leveraging all the tools that we have to build a more sustainable food system. I think a lot of people who kind of initially push back on this, same thing with genetically modified organisms in our crop species. Once you actually explain to them the benefits of having that type of precision when you're developing, you know, better foods, it really resonates with people.
Very cool. And tell me, Paul, why did you choose, maybe not you, but your people, if not you, choose the word clean meat? Because that you know, that's a little unfair because it implies that meat from a living animal is dirty.
Well, the term...
So that's not, you know, would you agree that you're playing dirty pool there?
The term clean meat was really popularized by the Good Food Institute where Liz works. And I'll tell you, one, like clean energy, clean meat is just cleaner for the planet. But it's also just literally cleaner. So think about it. Right now, we're warned to treat raw meat in our kitchens almost like toxic waste. Why? Because it's riddled with feces. E. coli, salmonella, campylobacter. These are all intestinal pathogens that can sicken us if we don't cook the crap out of our meat. Literally, but
cook the crap out of the meat.
Yes,
I like that.
Literally,
okay.
Cooking the crap out of the meat. But when you're growing clean meat, you don't need to grow intestines at all. You don't have those intestinal pathogens. You're just growing the muscle that you want, and so that's why it's both literally cleaner and cleaner for the planet.
Okay, you've convinced me.
Great.
I didn't think that would happen.
We got a cosmic query.
Oh yeah,
from
we're ready
somebody,
for cosmic query. Cosmic query section.
Yeah, this is.
Wait. I have to introduce it.
Okay.
Now is the time for cosmic queries. We have two good experts about this topic,
yep.
And I will just sort of watch as this unfolds.
Okay, go. So this came in through Facebook. There's a huge fascination with this whole topic, right? This is Daniel S. Haltgrew, and he said that he read that clean meat tastes bland because it's muscle cells and there's no fat cells. Ooh. So what do you need to do to get stranded fat, marbling, like that you find in a good steak, and how far away is that?
Yeah. So Liz, you know, if I'm choosing a steak, it's the marbled steak because it's not, of course, it's not just the meat, it's the fat.
Absolutely.
And that this is, And the Kobe steaks and all that whole other sort of branch of steak eating, that's fat level, very high fat level. So what's going on there?
Yeah, and fat is such a flavor carrier, obviously. So it also provides some nutritional value. There's all kinds of reasons you would want a genuine marbled steak. So for this question, I would just urge that all of the companies that have developed products so far, these are early stage prototypes. They're working with single cell cultures. So yeah, some of the products so far have just been muscle cells. But of course, there's the ability to co-culture multiple cell types. So to have muscle cells growing right alongside fat cells. What's cool and what really geeks me out is that when you have these cells grown on what's called a scaffolding material that's helping to kind of structure the final product, you can actually use that scaffolding material to help guide the cells where spatially you want them to differentiate into muscle versus fat. So imagine having the perfect marble steak, and you can make a million of those with that exact marbling pattern because you're defining it at that level.
Yeah, so you would need someone to study the perfect steak under natural causes and then duplicate that or possibly even improve on it now that you have laboratory controls. Very
Absolutely.
Cool. So you can cultivate fat cells the way you can protein cells.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm thinking fat is just fat.
Yeah, well, so it's...
But you need to just, sit those cells down in front of Netflix for 3 weeks.
That's how you get
nachos
them.
Nachos all the time.
Eat nachos. That's how you get it. All right, so you got another
Okay, so
query.
This is Shay, and he wrote in on Instagram. He asked how much energy will be consumed growing meat in a lab versus raising animals.
Pound for pound.
Pound for pound. So there are a lot of different life cycle analyses that have been done so far, but and they show generally, not always, but generally that you're talking about a big energy savings, but also way fewer greenhouse gas emissions, way less land, 99% less land, much less water use. But as Liz correctly points out, these are still early prototypes. Like, they don't know what it's going to be when it's at commercial scale yet. Presumably it will be even more efficient. But for right now, it's looking pretty good.
So what you're saying is the projections for the land use, water use, power use are so much better than anything going on now that even when it becomes mass market commercialized, you win, and you're going to win every contest up against whatever was used to be required to get the same product.
Hands down.
Water use, everything.
Yep.
Right, because you don't have to create the grass that the cow eats to make the steak.
Yeah, think about it. Right now, an animal is doing all types of things that require calories for things that we don't care about. Breathing, digesting, thinking, seeing, walking.
Right.
When you're just growing the muscle that we want or the fat that we want, you need way fewer resources to do that.
Mm-hmm. And even don't animals taste better when they can move around and you give them space? They actually need more space?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think that's what they say.
Do you eat meat?
I don't think that's what they say.
I don't think that's what they say.
But you know, free-range chickens taste better than chickens who live in a cage forever.
Well, usually the free-range also have other aspects about them that make them...
Like a little treadmill.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are no treadmills. you don't want a buff...
Big muscular chicken on your table.
What else you have?
Okay, so Mason Everest on Twitter, he asks, how long, roughly, that's nice that he gave you that out, is the process from animal cells to edible product? So I guess he's talking about two cells in the beginning.
Yeah. So Liz, if you start with one cell and then it doubles and quadruples and whatever, how long does it take? Just physically, if you were to watch it happen.
Yeah, good question. So we can work out the math on that. Obviously, cells are growing exponentially. The doubling time for these types of animal cells is typically on the order of about 20 to 24 hours. I've done some calculations myself when I'm trying to look at how close might we get to cost parity and so forth, where I'm trying to bound how long a process might be from, say, a starter vial to growing, say, a 20,000 liter tank full of cells. And for that process, being pretty conservative with doubling times, we're looking at something between maybe 3 weeks and 5 weeks.
Right, and keep in mind...
And that's for a whole batch, kind of from start to finish. But with any scale process, you'll be making use of the latter end of that exponential growth curve and simply harvesting, get another doubling, and so forth.
Right, but it still feels short to me, because if you 2 to the 30th power, if you go over a month, What do you get there? You get 5 billion, I think, something like that.
You're a better mathlete than I am.
But cells are very small. So 5 billion cells, that's not very much.
Like a Shake Shack double burger? Well, because
doubling time is in your favor, that if you don't have what you need in the 21st day, you might have what you need in the 22nd day, because what happens in the 22nd day duplicates what happened between day 1 and day 21.
So, absolutely.
So really, this is a no-brainer here.
Literally.
Yes. Is he good? Is he good? He's good. Okay, what else you got?
Okay, this is
one more question before we take a break.
Last one? Okay, cool. How do the nutritional benefits, and this is from Frank Kane on Patreon. He's one of our Patreon supporters.
You're supposed to read his question first.
Oh, I am?
Yes.
Okay.
Patreon get their questions first.
Oh, let's edit this. sorry, Frank Kane. Yeah. How do the nutritional benefits of clean meat stack up to soy and bean-based meat substitutes that are already available?
Ooh, good one. Good one. Who's going to take that? Ball? Yeah?
I'm happy to.
You eat soy?
Oh, yeah.
You're a vegan or a vegetarian?
Well, I've eaten queen meat many times, so whatever that makes me, I'm a queen meatitarian, I guess. But
were you so happy to eat it the first time? You haven't eaten it in a long time?
The first time I ate queen meat was in 2014, and at that time, more humans had gone into space than had eaten meat, real meat grown outside of an animal. So in that, I was happy. I thought it was a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But it didn't do much else for me other than that.
Right.
But since then, I've eaten queen beef, fish, duck, chorizo, liver, yogurt, like lots of these products are
all
now,
in one. Go.
Yeah. It was like the ultimate turducken, just everything all together. I've eaten them separately. One of the benefits of writing this book was that these companies want to share their product with you.
But nutritionally.
Yes. So you can control. So as Liz was saying, you can control how much fat, the types of fats. I mean, theoretically, you could envision putting, instead of saturated fats in, maybe omega-3 fatty acids. So you would have a hamburger that, rather than causing heart attacks, would prevent them. But right now, they're just trying to get it to the point where it's just the same exact thing.
So the same amount of protein
as it was in meat.
So then you could just do a comparison directly with soy as with regular meat.
Right now the queen meat products are trying to get them as to be exactly like the meat that we have, except much safer. Then when you compare it, let's say, to plant-based products are very nutritious. They're good for you. They're sustainable. They're very energy efficient, and they're great. We want them. Queen meat is not an alternative to them. It's really a supplement, because if you think about it, think about it kind of like fossil fuels, in that fossil fuels are such a big problem, you want more than one solution. You don't want just wind. You want solar, you want geothermal, you want to put everything in one basket. The same with the problem of animal agriculture. It's so bad, it's so serious, that you want many alternatives, including plant-based meats and whole plant-based foods, but also queen meats too.
All right, well, we got to take a quick break, and when we come back, more about clean meat. Star Talk is coming.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
We're back on Star Talk, Neil deGrasse Tyson, with my co-host, Maeve Hagan.
Yep, here I am.
And our topic today is clean meat. And I've got someone who literally wrote the book on it, Paul Shapiro.
I literally wrote the book because I literally wrote the only book on the only book.
Hence the book on it. How growing meat without animals will revolutionize dinner and the world. And joining us on video call is Liz Specht, senior scientist at the Good Food Institute. And you're joining us from San Francisco. So thanks for being on the show. And just a quick question. I heard before the break, Paul just slipped in, talked about vegetative meat.
Plant-based
meat. I don't know what that is. What is it? Is it just the fake, like the soy burger and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it fake. It's very real natural food. It's just we use plants to mimic the taste and texture of meat.
Have you seen the YouTube video where it's meat eaters talking about food the way vegetarians would?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
And okay, well, have you tried this celery made from animal meat? We've taken out the flavor and put in celery flavor, so it tastes just like celery, amazing. Except it's made from burger.
Yes. Right?
It's a whole video skit. It's pretty funny.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? I want to just tell a very brief story. So in the mid-19th century, you had a huge natural ice industry. They're harvesting lots of blocks of ice from frozen lakes in the north, transporting it all around the world. Then you have the advent of industrial refrigeration. And all of a sudden, it's a lot cheaper to produce ice from the water right in front of you. Just cool it down. The natural ice makers...
By the way, that took major understandings and advances in physics and thermodynamics.
Yeah, big
to be able to take heat from something take heat out of something that's already colder than the environment, to make it colder.
Yeah.
That was a major advance in sort of the engineering physics of thermodynamics. But go on.
Well, the natural ice people, the barons of the natural ice industry, were really upset by this because it threatened their market. And so they derided what they called artificial ice. And they said, oh, be careful of the artificial ice. The ammonia used in the coolant could leak in. It could hurt you. The irony at the time was that the so-called artificial ice was actually much safer than the natural ice, because the natural ice, one, is coming from waters that are polluted with Industrial Revolution pollutants, and they've got horses dredging the ice out, going to the bathroom right on top of the ice, as they're pulling out, whereas the artificial ice was being produced from water that had been filtered or boiled. You fast forward to today, and virtually every one of us has an artificial ice maker in our homes. We call them freezers, and nobody thinks there's anything unnatural or fake about it. We just call it ice.
Right. So, Maeve.
Yep.
We're still in Cosmic Queries mode.
Yes, we are.
So give it to me.
Okay. This is from Chris. This is from Chris Ryu, and he's on Patreon. Now, he opens by saying, nice to meet you. Okay? I just want to say that.
Who's he meeting?
M-E-A-T.
Oh, now we meet you!
None of us ever heard the joke.
You've never heard it before. I'm sure you haven't. That's very nice of you. So he's asking, how does the clean meat process compare with organic farming when it comes to greenhouse emissions, energy consumption, and the space that you need? So he's writing from the UK, actually. So what do you think, organic farming?
Yeah, Liz.
Sure. I'll hop on this. Paul took a life cycle analysis question. So I think the most relevant attribute here is really the amount of resources used. Like Paul said, when we're growing meat by funneling calories through an animal, it's an inherently inefficient process, just thermodynamically. There's no getting around that. So organic farming, just like industrialized animal agriculture, will always be much less efficient. In many cases, organic farming often ends up taking more land because you're not able to kind of get the same yield out of the same area of land for the feed, for example, for these animals.
That's organic farming relative to traditional farming. Even takes more land for the same yield. That's what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So so it's more efficient than all of the above is what this comes down to, whether or not you're organic. Right. So it could put organic, have them rethink, because you can have organic animals, of course. Organic is not just vegetables, right? So this would completely transform.
It means that they're not given, I guess, antibiotics and hormones and stuff, right? That's what an organic animal is.
Yeah, it's now formally defined. Yeah, organic.
Right. Yeah. This is an interesting question from a chef. His name is Aaron Nelson. And he said, I'm a chef. I'm interested in the idea of lab-grown meat. As it stands, where a cow is raised, how it's raised, what it eats, all affect the flavor and the texture of a steak. Do you think lab-grown meats could open the possibility of designer meats with customizable taste, appearance, and texture?
Yeah, because I've been in restaurants where they say, this meat, it's cheese. You can buy cheese. This is spring cheese versus fall cheese. Wow. In the spring, the cows are eating on this side of the hill, and the grass is this. But later on, it's a different grass, and so
right. There's like biodynamic food. Yeah.
So Liz, do you know the molecules well enough to duplicate the subtleties that go on not only in the food we eat but in our capacity to taste it? Are you there?
Like a sunshine morning in Montana. That's where this cow
was. And the monks treated this, right? Massaged this cow.
The cow felt uncomfortable.
Yeah, do you have the monk massage gene in there? Yeah.
They actually have monks stirring the bioreactors.
Yeah.
Give them something to do.
They add their secret sauce. Yeah, I know, not there yet, just because people haven't looked at it yet. But I think that's a relatively straightforward question to answer. And I think what's so exciting about this process is the degree of control you have over it. So you can do an analysis of what are all of the subtle flavor components that you're getting when, you know, you're fermenting grass from a certain area, and you can figure out what that actually is. And then you make your cell culture media, their nutrient feed, to have exactly that composition. So from a culinary perspective, I mean, you could patent your formula of what you're feeding to your cells, and that can be your five-star meat, one of a kind, that you hang your hat on as a chef.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. Patent your own steak. And what it would also mean is whatever might, because it's not just
didn't Donald Trump have his own steaks?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
He's such a leader in scientific thinking. So, well, how lucky we are.
So it seems to me there's not only whatever the cow ate giving whatever flavor and texture to the meat that was in it that you now can possibly duplicate, but there's also the topical dressings you might put on it, the dry rub. In principle, you could infuse your cultures with like Texas barbecue sauce, right? So then you just get the meat, cook it. It's got all the flavor you would have put on it after the fact.
That's just like Iberico ham, right? The pigs eat this special type of acorn and then they taste so good.
I didn't know about this ham.
Oh, it's delicious. Okay. But it's basically your idea. It's happening.
We're going to drop acorns in with the cells. So
you are. There you go. Yeah. It would be an interesting cocktail, I guess, when you do that. What else you got? Time for a couple more questions.
Okay, so I mean, this is from Instagram, the Granolin. I can't wait to try this. I hope it's good enough to shut all the vegans up. I mean, vegans do love to be vegan.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's not all of them, but some of them. We all know the ones that do.
We do,
right?
Yeah.
And it's odd because Paul, I mean, I'm the senior citizen here. There was a day where you were invited to someone's house. They didn't ask you what you couldn't eat. You just ate what you were served. Any allergies? Or well, I'm vegetarian. I'm this and I'm allergic to these seven. Okay, I will now accommodate you. That is today. But back in my day, no, you ate what was put in front of your face, no matter what. So the whole culture.
It was snowing outside too all the time.
All the time. Uphill, back and forth to school.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm just intrigued how, like you said, it's almost as though people's food habits have become their religions, and you choose friends based on it. And you, so it'd be nice if that we can do away with that. If we just manufacture everything in the lab, I'm a scientist. Just go for it. I'm there for you.
Yeah, I mean, already a lot of our foods do start out in a laboratory, right? Like you think about cornflakes. I mean, it's not like they just grow on a tree. Some white coat scientist in a lab created cornflakes, and now it's produced in a factory. Eventually, clean meat isn't going to be coming from a lab. It'll be coming from a brewery, basically. And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, what excites me about clean meat is that it actually levels the playing field in terms of what globally we can all eat, because we're lowering the resource burden of making meat. So this is no longer a, wealthy Western world type luxury, this is now something that could be accessible to everyone. So I think, you know, in some ways it makes eating less politicized because we're all using a much more effective method that makes this kind of democratized.
And
ooh, that's good. We just pause on that moment.
Right.
Depoliticizing food. This is beautiful. That's beautiful, Liz.
Because, like, here in America, we have so many options. Is that right?
And the options we take for granted as well.
Right. But, I mean, that doesn't really, like, already we have, like, so much here, but it hasn't evened things out around the world.
Of course not. Right, yeah. Right. Just we have access to too many resources.
Right. We're just getting so chubby.
Yeah, I mean, a diet's very heavy in meat is a first world issue, right? Like, there's a reason why the poorer nations of the world don't eat that much meat, because it's very resource intensive. And so I think Liz is right when we're talking about democratizing food. If you could have these type of systems where you're producing meat much more efficiently, you could make it available not only to people who don't have access to it today, but to the billions of people who are going to come onto the planet, primarily in developing countries like China and India and Brazil.
The billions yet born.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And who are going to want to eat like
China's
Americans
not a developing country
to the billions yet born. They're still coming into
it's like
many China has a space program. They're not a developing country.
okay?
Let's keep that clear.
But what you're hoping for, like in you, it would be like kind of trickle down chicken nuggets.
We got time for one last quick question.
This is from Andre Frost. If I want to support the development of vat-grown meat and haste vat-grown meat, yeah, that's what you
first
say?
First thing to do, Andre, is to stop calling it that. Yes, that's your first thing.
Vat-grown meat, okay.
And haste and its commercial viability, which company or organization should I throw money at?
One thing, Liz doesn't want to be so self-serving to say it, so I'll say supporting her nonprofit, the Good Food Institute, mm-hmm. which
helps incubate these.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So I will say that's a great place to invest your money,
Andre. The Good
Food
Institute.
But also, you know, if you buy the book, which you can get from cleanmeat.com.
Which is not a not-for-profit.
yeah. You can see the main companies that are leading in the space right now, because I profile those companies in the book. And
profile in a good way.
Yeah, they're... Because
in my world... It's never good.
Yeah, that's okay, right. Yeah, so right. Just, yes, good point. They are are historically profiled, meaning that I chronicle their exploits, and so you can check them out. But Andre, go to cleanmeat.com and see for yourself.
Well, excellent. So I trust and expect and hope the book will do well and help sort of change the dialogue out there. And Liz will be keeping an eye on you. I want my T-bone steak in
3 weeks. 3 weeks,
medium rare, and 3 weeks. But we'll be looking at the Good Food Institute, and good to know we've got good people out there just trying to change the world, all for the better. So thanks for being on Star Talk, Liz.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and Maeve.
Yeah,
always good to have you. Any final thoughts, Maeve?
That was so fun. No, I'm hungry.
I think the actual role of science, yes, it has affected information technology. It's affected transportation and can still. There are many more places that science has yet to tread in our lives that it could just transform civilization as we know it. And it's always science that transforms civilization. And this seems like it would be the next one and would be welcome to us all 10 billion of us sharing this planet in the year 2040. 2050, you've got it. Well, we got to end it there. You've been watching and more likely listening to this episode of Star Talk. Thanks, Paul Shapiro, Maeve, Liz. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
Radio Andy.
Hey, it's Andy Cohen. Join me on Andy Cohen Live, where it's just you, me, and some of the world's biggest celebrities.
Paris Hilton.
Chelsea Handler.
Seth Rogen.
I love you, Miley. Thank you so much.
You can listen to Andy Cohen Live at home or anywhere you are. No car required. Download the SiriusXM app for over 425 channels of ad-free music, sports, entertainment, and more. Subscribe now and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Temper Adapt Collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.